Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
ESPN 97.5, presented by Zadok Jewelers.
KFNC 97.9 HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston, a Gal Media station.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We could leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies be line. With a death wish, be right, didn't help. No name on the guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Start with this. They're committed to the bit, right? What are our problems? We struggle to get into offense. We have bad final quarters. We turn the ball over. And Reed Sheppard gets inconsistent minutes. All those things happened in last night's game. Now the final quarter last night was overtime. Kevin Durant had 8 turnovers. We'll actually hear from him here in a little bit. He talked about his game. Reed Sheppard was a spark in the fourth quarter, but his inconsistent defense got him benched, if you want to put it that way, in overtime. And they had, at one point late in the fourth quarter, they had a 7-point lead after a Tar Eason three with 3:26 remaining. And the game goes into overtime, and really it shouldn't have, because Tyrese Maxey got to the rim as he did most of the night. There was a goaltend that wasn't called, and it led to overtime where the Sixers pulled away. And that goaltending rule, and I was watching the Sixers broadcast, and the play-by-play person suggested that this could lead to a rule change. I mean, we've dealt with this for a bit now, where they don't call goaltending, so they can't review it. Like, it's not like the NFL where a fumble or non-fumble occurs and they let it play out and then they go back and look at it. The NBA does not go back and look at non-calls, at least when it comes to goaltending. So what was a clear goaltending that would have led to a Rockets loss turned into a jump ball situation, and they go to overtime and lose anyway. So they lose to the Sixers 128-122. I mentioned Reed Sheppard. He shot the ball and got them going in the fourth quarter to help with the comeback, and actually to take us a pretty sizable lead. And then he saw no minutes. And it's just something where the head coach demands a certain level of play on one end of the floor. And if you can't provide it, if he sees any slippage, it goes back to what Sean has talked about, where if Amen Thompson lets anyone get by him on a dribble drive, Ime loses his mind a little bit when it comes to Amen. And it's the same way for the rest of his guys. I mean, I'm sure he has a higher standard for Amen because of what he's capable of. But even with Reed Sheppard, if you do not hold up on that end of the floor, you are not guaranteed minutes, no matter what you can do offensively, even if the team needs you to be on the floor to create offense. It doesn't matter. And Reed Sheppard certainly hasn't reached a status with Ime Udoka where his defensive deficiencies will keep him on the well, won't keep him off the floor. Like Kevin Durant turned the ball over 8 times. Of course, Kevin Durant's not coming off the floor. There are other guys who can struggle ball handling and not come off the floor. But if Reed Sheppard looks like a sieve defensively, a traffic cone, come over here, sit by me. Even in a game where we need to score. They only score 7 points in overtime, lose 128 to 122. They got the Pistons tonight, so it doesn't get easier in the back-to-back. That game's on Prime for anyone who wants to see the Rocks tonight. Hopefully you've already had your Prime subscription because you like Amazon delivering you packages. Well, that's how you get to watch the Rockets tonight on your smart TV or your phone, I guess. So that was, or your laptop. That was unfortunate. That was a game that they had in hand. They kept getting second chance opportunities, which the Sixers broadcast was frustrated with. But when it mattered most, they couldn't get stops. They couldn't score the ball enough. And they go down to a Sixers team who's fine. They're probably better than some people thought. Joel Embiid's playing more now. Paul George is still kind of a shell of himself, but they do have Maxey. They do have Edgecombe. And most importantly, they got the win last night. So 128-122, the final there. And let's hear from Kevin Durant, a guy who doesn't get taken off the floor, but he did acknowledge that his play was subpar. Here's Kevin Durant on his turnovers.
Yeah, it wasn't good enough. It just wasn't good enough. I had 8 turnovers, 5 in the first half, which gave him a 7-point lead, which gave him confidence.
Yeah, he's not happy with his performance, and he became the guy they leaned into late in the fourth quarter. He made a big time jumper after the Rockets blew a lead to put them up 2 with about a minute remaining, and then Tyrese Maxey once again got his way and tied it again, and then the game goes overtime after Kevin Durant got the block that should have been a goaltend. So 128-122. The Reed Shepherd thing, I think it's just going to be a conversation that Rocket fans aren't going to want to have, and a story they're going to have to just deal with. Your coach, no matter what you think of him, no matter what you think about his lack of offensive, let's say, expertise, he will lean in to what he knows, and what he knows is you play defense or you don't play for me. And that's just how it's going to be. There are going to be nights where you're desperate for offensive production because things are a little stagnant. A team is focusing on Kevin Durant, or Alpi's not having a great night. Alpi talked about it being one of his worst offensive performances of the season. And you're looking for a spark. But if you can't be a two-way player here, you better be a defensive stalwart. Because he will roll out a guy who doesn't have much offensively. That is not a problem. He'll roll you out there. At least he knows he can get stops with you. And defensively, the offense, certainly the offensive rebound as well. But if you're just going to be a guy who gives up as much as you get, he's going to look at that as a net negative. And that's where Reed Shepherd is, where he was exciting in that fourth quarter. And then you didn't see him because Ime Udoka was concerned about point of attack defense. If they're going to put him in pick and rolls and make sure he's locked in on Tyrese Maxey and let Tyrese Maxey go to work. He loses pieces of his soul when his defense gives up straight line drives.
Yeah. So Maxey one on Amin Thompson should have ended the game was just a straight line drive on
that,
Amin Thompson.
That stuff like eats at his soul. So he can't deal with it. So you got to come out of the game.
Yeah.
I think it goes beyond just, oh, it's bad basketball. He feels parts of himself dying inside and goes, okay, I can't deal with that. Come sit down. I got to find someone better.
Not to psychoanalyze Ime Udoka, but is it because like the way he stuck around the league was by playing good defense?
I mean, if we were having that conversation, some sports psychologist or just a regular old psychologist, therapist, talked to him about it, I would imagine, yes. It'd be like I was just throwing another former Spur, Bruce Bowen. And if he was a head coach, he wouldn't want a bunch of Bruce Bowens out there.
Yeah.
At least guys who can defend. And if you're not, and Bruce Bowen as a guy, and much like Ime Udoka as a guy who was a piece but never a star, he understands a star like Kevin Durant not always locking in defensively because he's Kevin Durant. Go do what you do. But a Reed Shepherd type, I don't think he can handle it. And until Reed elevates himself either defensively or just simply can't take off the floor offensively, we're going to be dealing with this.
Yeah, it is funny that it's like viewed as, like, he gives up as much as he gets on defense, where it's like, in his minutes, though, he's very often a positive.
He is a positive,
like,
yeah.
Like, they do track plus-minus.
Yes.
Like, you can tell.
But in the middle of the game, when he sees a couple blow-bys or a bad rotation, he's going to go, this guy's costing us.
Yeah, well.
Even if the numbers tell you that.
And in the start of the fourth quarter, he, like, you know, brings you back from a game and extends the lead in a game, and then you go to overtime, can't make a shot.
Yeah, all those things are why people are upset that Reese Everett didn't play.
Like, at some point, Ime Udoka, it's like, dude, you need offense. Like, you just...
It's not how he's built.
Like, Jabari Smith can roll out there, go 1-for-10 from three and play 38 minutes every night.
There are guys who are at a different status, I imagine. The tiers for Ime Udoka, like, of course, there's Kevin Durant. And if Fred was here, Fred VanVleet would be... amazingly enough, in the Kevin Durant tier, where he can't take him off the floor.
Equals.
And yeah. Then you got Amen and Jabari, big wings who can defend. Obviously, Jabari, bigger wing, but wings that can defend. And in anything offensively is kind of gravy. And then Şengün, who is another one of your offensive pieces, and he's improved certainly defensively as well. He's not great, but he's improved enough where it's not crazy, although he was a minus 18 last night. Hell, look. Jabari, Kevin Durant, and Alperen were all double-digit minuses. And as you mentioned, Reed was a plus 6. Capella was a plus 12 in his 15 minutes. But I think it's just how the coach sees it. You need to defend Reed Sheppard, or I won't play you. Doesn't matter what the numbers say. I'm watching you get beat.
Doesn't matter that we win your minutes more often than not.
But when I look at you on the floor, I want to die inside when guys get by you. No matter... I don't think it's analytical. I'm sure after the game, the numbers will tell you that Reed should play more, and Sheppard should have played in overtime. And it's not like the guys who are out there kept Tyrese Maxey from doing what he wanted to anyway. But if I'm going to pull someone, it's going to be you.
Yeah.
And Reed Sheppard had to sit down. Only played 23 minutes. Didn't shoot the ball particularly well yesterday from the field. From three, he was good. 4-7. But just from the field overall, 5-14. And led the bench in scoring. Doesn't matter, though. Come sit next to me. In fact, don't sit next to me. Sit next to Royale Ivy. Because yeah. I don't even want you near me right
Think
now.
Think about what you've done.
Yeah. What do you mean? Have a positive plus minus? No, not that.
No.
Those rotations.
Positive in the wrong way.
Yeah, those rotations you missed and that blow by you gave up.
I'd rather win 6-0 than 18-12.
Yeah, in
that's
the
basically what it is.
Yeah,
it basically just boils down to I rather win and not score, but keep them from scoring more, even though they didn't work in overtime.
No,
than try to score to win.
Yeah, Ime would rather win in football terms. He'd rather win set 14-13.
Yeah,
than get into a game where he might win 31-24 because Reed Sheppard goes on a run, throws a couple touchdown passes. He's not looking for that. Get stops. He wants to get stops, and understandably, I get it. You play great defense; you got a chance to win every game.
Is he the Brian Flores of the?
Is Reed Sheppard Tua?
Yeah,
maybe we'll see.
He walks by, you stink.
Yeah, yeah. What problematic guard is he going to try to trade for to get Tua out of here? I mean, get Reed Sheppard out of here in this case. Who would be the Deshaun Watson of the NBA right now? That Brian Flores, Ime Udoka is desperate to get.
Hmm.
I don't want to put Deshaun on anyone.
Yeah, no, yeah. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't. I was racking my mind for the, you know,
it have to be
the guys with the rap sheets.
Yeah. Well, let's go defensive first.
Yeah.
Guard that he would think is better. It'd be one of those types. I saw that the Rockets were somehow linked to Jose Alvarado.
Makes sense.
He's kind of problematic. He's always trying to. He's always starting fights on the court. It's more on the court stuff, not off the court.
It's pest.
Like if he was desperate to have Jose Alvarado here instead of Reed Sheppard,
yeah,
that would bother a lot of people.
It did cross my mind before the fourth quarter of the Spurs game earlier this week, where I was watching Stephon Castle and then I was watching Reed Sheppard not play or play very little, mm-hmm. and I was like, it is weird that they drafted one guy ahead of the other. Like Stephon Castle is exactly what Ime Udoka wants, including like going 5-for-19, like that but playing good defense.
Yes, it feels like
he'd prefer that.
Yeah, it feels like if we're talking about who pushed for a certain player, if you consider Stephon Castle in the same draft, although everyone had Reed Shepard as the better prospect, at least the NBA pundits, the NBA media, if that would feel like Ime got trumped by another person in the organization. If we just go by what we see,
It just doesn't make sense that he watched Reed Shepard and was like, yep, sounds good. Draft him third overall.
Over a guy like Castle.
Yeah, can't wait to not play him.
The point of attack, point guard himself.
Yeah.
Who's bigger, who's better defensively. Yeah, it's an interesting thing to look at. Like, wait a minute.
Just like...
The coach's personality, why? Reed over Castle?
I don't think we're going to need the diving in the archives like Brandon Bean versus Sean McDermott to find out whose pick that was, because it definitely was not Ime Udoka's.
I mean, I can't say that, but everything we know about what so far the Shepard tenured feels like that was someone else's pick.
I have a very hard time believing that it's Ime Udoka's. It might be Patrick Fertitta's.
Yeah, whoever decided on the pick, they're probably not wrong. Reed Shepard's a good young player. He just will be the one guy Ime Udoka will bench at any point because he gave up a blow by, bad in rotation, whatever it is. If he doesn't play well in the coverages he sets, he'll sit down.
Yeah, I wonder if it's just like a tenure thing, because it was the same thing with Shingun, where it's just like the year one of Ime Udoka. Like, it was pretty regular that basically one of Shingun, Smith, or Jalen Green
for an older player.
Yeah, would get benched for someone where you're like, I know that this is to learn a lesson.
Yeah.
I have a pretty hard time thinking that, like, Jeff Green's actually the...
Why is Jeff Green closing?
The way to go here.
Yeah.
But that was more like, hey, this is a team that's improving. Doesn't really matter if they make the playoffs or not. Like, they're just... Everything's about growth. This is like a... Hey, you kind of need to win 50 games with this team type of team. It is interesting that it's still like, you know, hey, sit next to me / Royal Ivy. Talk about the Texas Longhorns transfer portal class or whatever. Actually, they can talk about Texas playing Kentucky earlier this week. That's what those two guys can talk about.
I'm sure that was what Reed Shepard was focused on.
Reed Shepard's like, Mark Pope, yuck. Not my Kentucky basketball.
Well, that was unfortunate. The loss and the continuing thought that Ime Udoka will bench Reed at the drop of a hat. We'll talk to Pena. Hey, Pena, hold on. You want to talk Rockets? We'll get to you when we come back. Anyone else want to get in? 713-780-3776. We'll continue that conversation. Of course, Michael Carroll joins us today right around 11:30. So if you have thoughts on movies and television, Michael Carroll will be here for you on that. We're just getting started here. We will be back.
ESPN 97.5.
That is me.
Kane is in the building.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Let's get the Pena here. He held through the break. Appreciate it. He wants to talk some Rockets. What's up, Pena?
Hey, what's up, Del? Hey, super knowledgeable like about basketball culture, whatever you want to call it, but you know, people were saying, well, a lot of y'all and stuff were saying Ime Udoka took the Celtics to the championship and all this, and I honestly didn't even know he was their coach. What's his name was their coach? Who was the guy before him, the white guy, wasn't it Bradley Stevens? I thought he was still their coach. And I thought he was, like, the mastermind that brought the Celtics together and all this stuff. And I was like, when did he become their coach? So I don't even know if he's, like, that good of a coach or not to be even putting my input about it. So I just was wanting to call about that. But I really wanted to call about the Texans. I really don't trust Nick Caserio to build an offense because I feel like what you really need is an offensive line to make a good offense, right? And he just I can't really say nothing about Ariante Urser yet. Every other lineman he's chosen has been a miss. Titus Howard, I know he didn't pick him, but he's not like no superstar. He ain't no Penei Sewell or anything. If I had to give him a grade, it's probably like a C-plus as a lineman. So, if anything, I think Nick Caserio might have to go. He's built a pretty good defense, but I trust more of D'Amico Ryan's. That's about it, man. Have a great day.
Appreciate it. So, we'll start with the Ime stuff. Ime Udoka did follow Brad Stevens. Brad Stevens went up to the executive offices to run the basketball operations for the Celtics. Ime Udoka got the job, and they did make the finals. Now, of course, that team was built by, I guess, a combination of Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens, and Ime only got to coach them for a year before he fumbled Nia Long. I mean, there's a lot more that went into that. Like, losing Nia Long wouldn't get you fired from the Celtics. What he did to lose Nia Long got him fired from the Celtics, and you can look into that if you want to.
It would be funny, though, if it was just like...
If Brad Stevens was
Brad Stevens, of all people, was like, dude, what happened?
He loved her in, what was she in, Friday? Was it Friday?
Brad Stevens seems like a guy who, like, hasn't seen a lot of, movies. I was going to say new movies. I don't think he's seen, a lot. Like, he's probably only seen, Hoosiers, you know?
Joe Mazzulla continues to try to get him to watch The Town. And Brad Stevens like, no.
No, that's what I need to know. Did Brad Stevens ever watch The Town?
Yeah. Who knows? But
just to fully understand the man he was hiring.
The man watched it every week. Let me figure out who...
What is in this text for me to understand?
How do I further understand Joe Mazzulla? So
a lot of breaking Dominicans' legs in this movie. A lot more than I thought.
So to Pena's point, or to answer him, there wasn't a lot of evidence that Ime Udoka was a great coach. We just know that he took over the Celtics and they hadn't made the finals under Brad Stevens, and they did in his first year. Of course, they lose to the Warriors in six. Since he's been here, he was brought in to be a culture setter. That was part of the appeal. And the Rockets improved every year under him. This was one of those years, and the timeline got sped up because you traded for Kevin Durant, where now we go from fun story to, hey, the Rockets are really good, or at least pretty good. Now we got to be pretty good and a real contender. And now any flaws he has as a coach are being looked at and picked apart, because there are some stakes. The Rockets haven't had these type of stakes since, as far as what people believe they can accomplish and what the organization does realistically believe they can accomplish since what? The final year of Harden, Paul? Because I don't know how many people took the Westbrook-Harden thing seriously as far as what they could accomplish. But Harden and Paul...
So like 2018-19.
Yeah, before that broke apart, that was a year filled like, hey, we can go win it all. So when you feel like you can go win it all, your coach is under a microscope. And any of the little things that you pushed aside because you're trying to climb the mountain and you haven't reached the peak, those things get pushed aside because you're still up going on an upward trajectory. Now, if you feel like you're kind of plateauing, you start to pick apart some things, and we'll see. I don't know that the Rockets are going to move away from Ime Udoka. More playoff failures have to happen. Like, if he gets knocked out in the first round again, then the noise gets louder.
Yeah, I mean, if they get knocked down the first round again, it feels like it would then become next season.
Yeah.
He's on the, you know, it's like one of those where...
Where is he like the Mark Jackson of the Rockets, yeah, like he was for the Warriors, and they got to go hire someone else to get him over the hump. Those type of conversations start to get had. And we know the NBA... coaching tenures don't last that long, and it could be for many reasons. Maybe you have a problem with ownership or the general manager, or
fumbling Nia Long.
Maybe, or you simply aren't living up to expectations. So, and he mentioned what else? Oh, he mentioned the Texans and Nick Caserio. He doesn't have a history of building an offensive line. He doesn't have really a history of at least acquiring frontline NFL offensive talent outside of Nico Collins, which he talked about earlier this week. So if you don't trust him, I get it. But when you win the division three times in a row, win a playoff game 3 years in a row, I think it's very difficult, particularly when you have the McNairs as an ownership group, to think they're going to fire a three-time in a row playoff participant with when the general managers helped you get there. So I don't think Nick Caserio is getting fired. I think Jim Crane is the more, as all the ownership groups, he's the most reactionary of any owner. So you got some pretty patient people, I think, particularly when it comes to the Texans. So I don't think Nick Caserio is in any trouble. The CJ thing could be an inflection point. Like, if you give CJ Stroud a lot of money and it doesn't work out, now, of course, that would be years from now before the "it didn't work out" script is written or completed. But that could be one where now that you're given your young players like Will Anderson and CJ Stroud big contracts, then you have to go out and win bigger than what they had. But I don't think the Texans have the real interest in firing anyone at the current state of their franchise.
It is interesting that both teams just kind of feel like they're in the spot right now where it's like the good still is outweighing the bad for whatever frustrations you have for either Udoka or D'Amico / Caserio, like just kind of all of the Texans, where they're, and Rafael Stone, I guess, but Rafael Stone has been, he hasn't been in the eye of the storm when it comes to criticism as much. But it does seem like both teams' leadership is just in the spot where it's like, hey, like, you gotta do something here. Like, it is entering the, like, you know, we talk about championship windows. It's almost like the, like, firing window of, like, all right, patience is kind of running thin here.
Yeah, I mean, we're in year three with Ime Udoka, and the trajectory has been really good. But now we're talking about, is this team going to elevate to real contender status? Can they get to a Western Conference final? Can they get to a second round and give, as it stands now, the Thunder a really good series? Failing in the playoffs affects the players as far as how fans see them. Certainly we know how that goes. And then the coaches catch it too. From the fans, and then most importantly, the general manager and ownership group, because they're going to say, hey, look at the roster I put together. Why aren't you winning more? But that's probably multiple playoff failures for now.
No, but I mean, both are in from now, year three. Yeah. Either you're in year three or finished year three.
Yeah.
So and they made the playoffs. Like, you know, it's both first 2 years clear arrow up, and now it's kind of like the, oh, okay. Like, let's.
Yeah, and we're not see. Even we're not even into late season stuff with Ime. So if things start to flip and they play better basketball, then these conversations are something we can look back on and say, man, we didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
And then the playoffs will tell. All of this is about what they are and how they perform in the playoffs. And no matter what we look at and say, hey, there's issues here as far as your offense. You turn the ball over too much. You need a point guard. If they get a favorable draw, and by that I mean, hey, maybe there's an injury in the first round to someone they play and they win that series. And who knows if an injury happens in the second round. All of a sudden, you have a path to a conference final. He's not going anywhere, and he probably wouldn't go anywhere anyway. John, you want to talk Astros? We'll do that when we come back. So hang on. We'll get to you in a little bit. But let's talk about Aqueduct Plumbing Company. You know, we know bad weather is approaching, and for a lot of people, when it comes to the cold, there is concern about your pipes. Now, Aqueduct Plumbing Company can't fix your entire system in the next couple of days, but it's something to think about if you have concerns, and even if you hopefully make it through this storm in a way where you don't have any real damage. That's something to keep in your mind if you think if you know the pipes are older and you're one bad run away from something catastrophic happening to your home. Think about the people at Aqueduct Plumbing Company and go to their website and see all the things they provide. Look at that service drop-down menu and see what fits you. Maybe you just need something a little more simple, like a drain cleaning, or maybe you want to have something done with a leak and you need that detected. They have that there for you. And, of course, the giant job is a repipe. And it's a big job, and that means you need people who know what they're doing. And they've done over 1,000 of those, so they have competent, experienced contractors to get a repipe done for you if you need it. And, of course, as I always talk about, because my water heater's upstairs in the attic, if you don't want to deal with installing one of those, in that spot, they can do that for you too. So they do a lot for the local community. Just check out all the things they have to offer. In fact, they got that free price quote. So if you don't know what the problem is, or you do and you don't want to get charged for them telling you how much it costs, you go to Aqueduct Plumbing Company. They'll inspect it, see what the problem is, and get you that free quote. You can see all they have to offer at aqueductplumbingcompany.com. You can also call them at 281-488-6238. That's 281-488-6238. It's Aqueduct Plumbing Company.
Houston's independent voice for sports, ESPN 97.5.
It's the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Let's get to Jeff here. He wants to talk to Astros. What's up, Jeff?
Hey, Dallas.
Oh, John. Sorry, I said Jeff. Sorry, I was watching Jeff Athley walk into a press conference. I meant John. What's up, John?
Yeah. Hey, man, look, I've been hearing a whole lot of talk about the Astros thinking about trading Isaac Paredes. Listen, I'm not going to be happy about that. Look, the Astros, their infield, I'm sorry, I want to keep all of them because all of them can hit. And but if we get lucky enough and meet the Dodgers in the World Series, right now, we can match their offense, okay? I don't care if they have to take Cam Smith and Mize and give them some days off because they shouldn't have any gripe about how much time they get to play. But listen, man, Paredes, man, is the best hitter on the team besides Alvarez. And I love Alvarez. Alvarez, you can't even depend on him to stay healthy. Isaac Paredes is like our rebuild, man, our future. And I like Christian Walker because Christian Walker, we know he started off slow this season, but that happens with a lot of players that go to a whole new environment, you know. But he's a 30-some home run hitter. Isaac Paredes is a 30-some home run hitter. I mean, I love Correa, man, but I guess I'm almost to the point where I'm sorry Correa came back because Correa is a good player, and he did a lot for us, and I love him to death. And if this is going to be a problem and you're going to trade Isaac Paredes, man, I am not going to be happy. You know, I didn't understand this thing with Altuve last season. You know, he's slow. He can't play second base anymore. Well, hell, you made your team even weaker when you put him out there in the outfield because he looked even worse out there. You know, that's some crazy, silly stuff, man. You know, put the man back over there on second base because what he doesn't catch, he got backup. He got outfielders behind him, you know. But, man, that's what I'm talking about, the Isaac Paredes, man. That dude was off to a 30-something home run season last season, man. They cannot trade these guys. I want to keep Christian Walker. I want to keep Correa there. I want to keep Isaac Paredes there. Put Altuve back where he is. I don't. Cam Smith, we don't know what he is yet, and I love him to death. But if I have to pick between Cam Smith and Mize and Isaac Paredes, I'm keeping Paredes, man. I want to hear what y'all got to say about that, man. Y'all have a good day.
Appreciate it, John. Well, good news for you. Altuve will be at second base. I think the experiment in left is pretty much over, at least according to, I believe, Joe Espada talked about that earlier this offseason. They don't want to trade Paredes. They just may have to because the takers for Christian Walker, well, there aren't very many of them, considering his age and the contract and the declining numbers. I would love to keep Isak Paredes. I'm just not sure the Astros can find an avenue to play him. I'm just going by one projected lineup right now. And with with Yordan as your DH, Altuve at second, Correa at third, Christian Walker at first, if he remains, and of course you got Jeremy Peña at shortstop, Zach Cole, Jake Myers in the outfield, along with Jesus Sanchez. Now, these guys aren't always going to be every day, but that is just one projected starting lineup. You didn't hear Paredes' name mentioned. Now, I would certainly want to substitute Paredes for Christian Walker if I could. But I can't right now until a move is made. Now, I know the Red Sox have been mentioned heavily in a potential Paredes trade. And we've been, honestly, maybe every couple weeks, an Astros infielder being traded story pops up. And yet, we're in January, and it hasn't happened yet. But that's baseball. We probably won't happen until someone finally comes to the table because they're desperate in March or something, or late February, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Of course, you want to keep all your good players, but there are financial constraints as well. And the Astros, I imagine, would want to use whatever infielder they can trade to bolster their pitching if they can. Jake Meyers was a guy people were floating around as a very valuable trade piece. That hasn't happened yet. John, I appreciate it, but I don't think all those guys you listed are all going to be here if the Astros have their way.
Yeah. It is interesting, though, like, just the idea of, like, do you have to just have, like, the perfect amount of, like, you can't, like, have surplus of infielders where, I don't know, these guys will have days off.
Get hurt.
Everyone, Lord knows, they all got hurt last year. Like, there is a little bit of, like, one of them sits on the bench every day, or Yordan sits on the bench, and the other, and they all DH, or one of them DHs.
You know, there's a thing in college football: stack chips, keep stacking players. Baseball, at least this Astro team, apparently they're not against stacking. I just think they feel like, hey, the price plus maybe deficiencies elsewhere, they see an avenue to improve another spot while not losing very much, at least in their eyes, in that infield.
And that's why, like, Paredes is the one that's, I guess, most likely to go, because, you know, you're not trading Altuve, you're not trading Correa, cool. You're not trading Peña because he's too good, and then you also would have to move Correa back to shortstop when part of the reason you trade for him is that he can age into being a third baseman. So now you're really looking at Christian Walker and Isak Paredes. One of them just has trade value. The other one doesn't. It has negative trade values, you know? So whether – I know – I forgot who it was that threw out there, like, in the middle of the offseason that the Mets could – after Alonso left the Mets, it was – well, the Mets could maybe be a Christian Walker destination because, you know, they don't care if he's overpriced. They got money to spend, and they need a first baseman. I don't really know if the Mets are, like, looking to spend the money that way. And at that point, it is just a salary dump, that you're not getting anything. You're not balancing your roster, and you're just kicking a guy overboard. Where Paredes, you can maybe get a pitcher, maybe get a prospect that could be a pitcher for you, or you know, center fielder after Jake Meyers goes. So Paredes, he's on the block because he can actually get you stuff. I kind of agree with John, where I'm like, again, why do we need to have, like, four infielders for four infield spots? Like, having five is not the worst sin in the world. Yordan can play left every once in a while, and then they can all be in the lineup together.
Tell us Jim Crane.
Yeah.
Tell us Dana Brown.
Or just stop signing mid-30s first baseman.
No. That's what we do.
I would.
It's what we do.
When's Christian Walker's deal expire? Did he sign a 3-year deal?
Is it after next year?
I forgot if it was a 2 or 3 year deal. But
while you look that up, or we'll have the answer for it. Time to go to break. We can think about and sit on what John said, and probably agree honestly with that. But it doesn't appear that's what they're going to do. Christian Walker signed a 3-year, $60 million deal.
So after next season, let's not rush out to sign a 34-year-old first baseman.
After you, whatever happens with Christian Walker, let's not
take a year off.
Don't go 3 for 3.
Yeah, like, surely there's a third baseman in your minors that you can just move to first, or a first base, like, some slow guy that you could put at first base.
You would think, but that is not their course of action over the last 5 years or so. All right, we'll go to break with that. We have Michael Carroll joining us at 11:30, the host of Comicast. So if you want to talk TVs and movies, your time is about 11:30. We have a potential ratings bonanza for the NFL, or, well, I'll put it this way. There's a clear, if I would imagine there's a clear winner for the NFL in terms of ratings of what they might want coming off a championship weekend, and then a clear loser. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about how a giant audience watched CJ Stroud stink it up. We'll get to that when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
So the NFL has a clear, at least I think, has a clear choice for this weekend. You either get... Well, it's not either. There's three options. You can have May versus Stafford in the MVP Bowl. Prove who's the real MVP. The Rams versus the Patriots. They played in the Super Bowl. They played in three Super Bowls. Well, two Super Bowls previously. This would be the third. So they have that storyline. You got old versus new. All of those things. Sean McVay trying to get some revenge against the Patriots, although he's already won a Super Bowl since. There's that. Stafford versus May. All the things that come with that. Or you can get Stidham versus Darnold. Think of the choices the NFL has in front of them as far as promotion.
The posters.
The things that go into it.
The media day.
Yeah, and then, of course, the conversation leading up to if it's May versus Stafford, who's the real MVP, those conversations can be had. Or trying to sell Darnold versus Stidham. Of course, it could be Darnold versus Stafford or May versus Stidham. For either way, there's a clear choice that they would love. And if you're a conspiracy theorist, you would say the NFL will make it happen the way they want it to happen. Now, Seattle's on defense is nasty, although Stafford's had some good games against them. But I know how they want it. I'm just not sure they're going to get it.
Does the NFL, like, does it matter? Like,
no, people are
going to
watch
the NFL.
You know what? Honestly, people will watch the Super Bowl no matter what. I think all the media companies surrounding it would prefer Stafford versus May, but to sell whatever segments they have, all the videos they're going to create, the content, all that stuff, that's who wants it. But the NFL is going to get their views.
For the bye week of the Super Bowl and for Radio Row, people are rooting for
Patriots versus Rams.
Roger Goodell is like, oh.
Yeah, either way.
Money.
It's the Super Bowl. Money. We're going to be able to sell it.
The money's green either way.
That's true. That's a good point. It's the rest of us who will be talking about the Super Bowl who would prefer Stafford versus May.
I will say Darnold versus Stidham would
it'd be very funny.
It'd be funny. Like
Now you get into the conversation of the worst Super Bowl quarterback matchup of all time.
Yeah, it's a little different than – it's not as easy as building up the two MVP front runners with two great coaches and, like,
franchises who have recently been great and Patriots returning to greatness.
Yeah.
And, like, of course – and as I said, they've already played each other twice in the last, 20 years in Super Bowls, all that stuff. That's easy. But the conversations we would have about trying to figure out, has there ever been a worse quarterback matchup in, like, the last 40 years of Super Bowls?
Who, Jeff
Hostetler played Jim Kelly. I thought about Hostetler when he filled in for Sims.
Yeah.
It was Jim Kelly. Even Nick Foles played Tom Brady. Think about all the matchups of if the backup has to jump in.
Yeah.
Now Cam was the MVP versus broken down Manning, but still it was Peyton Manning.
Yeah, and it was, like, the reigning MVP. You know, it's like
there's nothing. I don't think a Stidham versus Darnold one could be topped.
Okay, let's just put this on ice, and if we actually need to unveil,
we'll get to it.
We'll actually do the research. Look through all 59 Super
Bowls. We're not gonna jump out ahead of a segment that we can do.
We can't get it off the top of our head, so we will have to research.
We have to do the research, but
the research won't be worth it until next week.
But it's already a front runner for the worst quarterback Super Bowl matchup of all time.
Who Dilfer play?
Dilfer played Collins.
Oh, my God. He's, like, solid.
Kerry Collins, yeah.
He's like the Darnold.
Yeah, so maybe that one competes. And, of course, but even that one had the historic defense of the Ravens.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's already unprecedented. Like, the Stidham thing would already just be like.
Yeah, because at least Nick Foles played in games before the NFC title game.
Yeah.
Because Wentz got hurt in the regular season, late in the regular season. Yeah, he
probably played like by the time of the Super Bowl, like six games.
I would have to look it up, but it might be around there. Stidham would play an AFC title game.
Coles.
Stidham would play two trophy games. The AFC title game. Two t-shirt games is what Stidham's going to play. That's what he's on right now.
Oh, wow.
Crazy.
Yeah, this doesn't even happen in like college football where like crazy stuff happens all the time.
No, it
doesn't. Like college football, they had Ole Miss play without their head coach.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I was thinking about that. When's the last time a backup quarterback played in a title game in college football?
Garrett Gilbert. Probably not the last.
No,
started. Oh, okay.
Started, yeah. McCoy got hurt. When's the last time a starting quarterback was the backup because the previous starter got hurt?
No, I mean like Tua Hurts, but Tua got pulled in the first half.
Hurts
got pulled in the first half.
I would probably have to go back to, was it 98 when Florida State played Tennessee? But even then, they had played a couple games without Chris Winkie, and they wound up, their backup got hurt too, so they wound up playing a third stringer. And they were still favored in that game, by the way.
Also, Florida State in, 2023? But they ended up not making
it. Because they had a backup quarterback.
Because the committee was like, F this.
No. I saw you guys barely beat Louisville. No.
The Broncos are so lucky there's not a committee to put Josh Allen in the title game.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, now that we think about it, let's put the Bills in.
Yeah. I know McDermott, they lost. Come on back.
Yeah, you know what?
Keon Coleman, I know it's awkward, but come on back.
Come on, all of you guys.
We got some cookies.
And speaking of the Bills, before we go to break, the Bills not only will interview Mike McDaniel, they have an interview set with Philip Rivers to be their head coach. Like, Mike McDaniel has the Charger job, but the Chargers have granted him the ability, if he gets the Bills job, he'll get out of the Chargers thing. They also want to talk to Philip Rivers. I mean, if the Terry Pegula stuff wasn't enough, they are doubling down. And we talked about it. Josh Allen, apparently, and maybe even Sean McDermott himself, has papered over what appears to be a franchise that is not a model franchise, but actually just a clownish organization. But you have a great quarterback, and it allows for all those things to not be brought to the surface. You're interviewing Philip Rivers. I know he's a high school football coach, but for what? Maybe he's a genius. Maybe I'm not giving this enough serious attention, but I can't imagine that this is a real thing and why it is. But Philip Rivers, Big Philly, will get an interview with the Bills as their head coach. Maybe he'll blow them away. And apparently Josh Allen is going to be heavy part of the interview process, who their next head coach will be. And some people don't think it's a great idea. Ryan Fitzpatrick doesn't. Also, I saw someplace, maybe it was Dan Orlovsky, who said that you shouldn't hire someone who's going to be Josh Allen's friend. It should be someone who just will be his coach. We'll see what the Bills do. Josh Allen certainly been keeping them afloat for years, and now he's going to have a say in who his head coach will be.
I did see this Schefter tweet, and I really debated. It was like in the middle of the Ime Udoka conversation.
Yeah.
I really debated coming in with the Lance Horn that Phil Rivers is interviewing for a job. I had to double check that it's like not a darn Schefter. It is actual Adam Schefter.
Yeah. And before we go to break, KJ asks, why can't Yordan play the outfield every day? He's 28 years old. You've seen that man's reaction to running.
Like,
his knees. You know why.
KJ, you have a point.
Yeah, I understand. He's 28 years old. Why can't he just stand out there and play the outfield?
Yeah.
Because his body will break down. I imagine that's the fear, that if they put too much strain on his legs, he will crumble and they're without their best hitter.
What would you say is like the, and then we can wrap it up. What's like the magic number of outfield days for Yordan Alvarez?
You mean in the Astros?
Yes, for the Astros. Like from the Astros or your perspective, like what's the like the perfect balance of like the maximum that he can do without risking life and limb?
Well, I want to have an informed opinion, so I'm going to pull up his seasons and see how many games the most games he's ever played in a season. It was 2024 where he appeared in 147 games. which is great because he only appeared in 48 last year.
Yeah, 100 more. I'll take
that. Yeah, I'll take that. So I'll have an answer for you when I come back. I'm going to see how many days he played in the outfield that year. Because if I get 147 out of Jordan, that's the number of outfield days I want. Like, whatever number that was in 2024, that's what
that's
I want.
The balance?
Yeah. John, you want to talk CFB backup quarterbacks? We'll certainly get to that when we come back as well. I did want to say this before we go to break. I said a lot of people saw CJ play terribly. It was 38 million viewers saw CJ and the Texans lose to the Patriots. It's ESPN's most watched event in history. They put it as event because I guess, hey, you know what? Maybe I guess SportsCenter, which would never reach those numbers. They
National
just won,
championship yeah. games.
They didn't even say football game because, of course, yeah. they've had other titles, soccer, all that stuff.
Yeah. 30 for 30s.
Sure. Back during COVID, it may have gotten to this point.
Yeah, the last dance.
The last dance. But 38 million viewers, the most watched event in ESPN history, and CJ was a star, but for all the wrong reasons. We'll get to John when we come back. Anyone else want to join us? 713-780-3776. Most watched sporting event, excluding Super Bowls, across Disney, period. Of course, ABC has had Super Bowls, so they excluded Super Bowls, but most watched event across any Disney channel as far as sports is concerned. All right, we'll go to break with that. John, anyone else, we'll get to you when we come back.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
What's your name?
ESPN 97.5, KFNC 97.9, HD2, Mont Belvieu, Houston.
Presented by Zadok Jewelers.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino.